We're like the hope holders when people don't have hope. And then going through my, you know, midlife perimenopause, like hopelessness is like a thing. Like there's times where you're just like, is this ever, like, when is this gonna get better? But I also, so I can have that empathy of how people show up in relationship to despair. But then, right, when we always say this, when you're in a relationship and you feel alone, it's worse than being single, you know. But when you can have this relationship and it feels good, then all the other stressors out there, it's going to be easier to handle, you know. And that's why I'm handling this probably better than I would if I...
Yeah, because we're more connected than we've been, yeah. So we're dealing with it. Yeah. It's not pulling us apart. If anything, it's bringing us closer together.
Hey, midlifers. Welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostess. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone. Until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Are you ready to step into the next chapter of your life with confidence and clarity? I've got something amazing just for you. Introducing the New You Blueprint, your free guide to designing the woman you want to become and creating a life you love. Inside this powerful blueprint, you'll find a journaling exercise that helps you envision your future self, the confident, joyful, unstoppable you. Plus, I've included a free guided meditation called The New You, designed to help you step into that vision with purpose and passion. If you've been feeling stuck, overwhelmed, or unsure of what's next for you, this is your sign. Grab your free New You Blueprint at new.wendyvalentine.com and let's start creating the new you today. Head over to new.wendyvalentine.com and download your free blueprint now. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. I'm Wendy Valentine, and today we have a fantastic episode lined up for you with two incredible guests, Tara and EJ Kerwin, the dynamic duo behind Relationship Renovation. They are relationship experts and founders of a thriving counseling practice in Tucson, Arizona, where they help couples strengthen and transform the relationships with empathy, communication, and connection. Through their Relationship Renovation Counseling Center podcast and their at-home program, which we're going to talk about today, they're providing powerful tools to couples around the world to help them create deeper, more fulfilling partnerships. We'll be diving into a topic that so many couples experience, but often struggle to talk about: desire disparity. Have you ever felt like you and your partner are on different pages when it comes to intimacy? Maybe you're the one feeling rejected, or perhaps you're feeling guilty for not wanting intimacy as much as your partner does. Well, Tara and EJ are here to share their expert advice on how to open up meaningful conversations, build intimacy beyond sex, and create small yet powerful connections that can bridge the gap between high desire and low desire partners. If you've ever felt the frustration, confusion, or disconnect in your relationship around this topic, you're not alone. And today's episode will provide the insights and tools you need to navigate it with love and understanding. So, without further ado, please welcome Tara and EJ Kerwin to the show.
That might be my favorite introduction.
Yeah, love the energy.
Ever. So thank you, Wendy. We're so happy to be here. That was awesome.
You are so welcome. Isn't that nice? We should just like record those and then you just play it when you wake up in the morning. You know,
exactly. It's like a hype song.
Yeah. Well, it's also like to bring that lightness to something that can feel so hopeless to so many couples. I feel like that energy is what's needed to kind of, right, be able to even begin the conversation, because we see a lot of couples who have to deal with that disparity and they feel really hopeless.
And so, let's start there. What is this, the desire disparity? Explain what that means.
I mean, this is something that so many couples come in with. You know, one of the things that couples love when they talk to us is that, you know, a lot of times it's stuff that we can directly relate to. And so they don't feel like, oh my God, I'm the only one who's dealing with, you know, it's just the fact that, oftentimes, right at the beginning of a relationship, the fireworks are going off and both people have that excitement level. And, you know, you just feel it's easy, you know, sex and intimacy are so easy at the beginning of a relationship oftentimes. And then, you know, life gets complicated and there's big changes that happen and there's kids and there's all kinds of things that happen, and it's inevitable that one person becomes the high desire partner and one person becomes the lower desire partner, and then figuring that out is the problem.
And it changes too throughout, like,
yeah,
right? Because I know when EJ and I met, I was the higher desire partner, and then after the twins were born, I was like, don't even look at me. Like, it changes throughout. Yeah. But the one thing that we recognize is that the couples don't talk about it. They don't talk about the changes or the transitions. So now it's just this disappointment or this like anxiety, like, oh, my partner wants to have sex and I don't know. And so we really help couples to soften it and start to talk about what it's like for each of them, because both of them are suffering when that disparity is there, but they don't talk about it. They really just start to blame each other. And then they come into our center, which we're so grateful for, and just let them know, like, first of all, this is normal. And this happens to almost every single couple out there. We just don't have the skills to talk about it because it's really vulnerable. Most of us weren't taught how to talk about intimacy and our needs and our wants when we're younger, or we're just like, you know, sex is great and it's supposed to feel good. And if you do it a lot, that's awesome. Like, really, that's what we get. And so we, going through our own, I mean, constant, right? We've been together for, what, 14 years? Okay, I got that right. I feel like, right, God, universe gives us what we try to take and learn from, and then we can give back to others. And so we've had to deal with the postpartum, now perimenopause, and we were just really stuck in it. Yet here's two therapists, right, that have the skills, and that's when we were just compelled to, like, do what we could, talk about the things, and then that's when we opened up our counseling center, because I said, if two of us, EJ, are having a difficult time navigating this, and I've been a marriage therapist for over 20 years, I said, we have to help couples in our community. So it was from that we grew in this way to help so many couples around the world feel normal and not broken, and that it takes skills to navigate this. It's not that it's organic in our body, like, oh, I'm going to let my partner know that I feel really rejected. Like, no, we don't do that. So yeah, and so that was.
No, that's awesome. And I was just thinking too, like, I mean, every day we're different, just individually, right? Like, not every day we wake up the same, feeling the same. We have bad days, we have good days. And then, of course, that affects the relationship. And then we're not always on the same page all day, every single day. And yeah, like, one person might be stressed because of a meeting coming up. One person is dealing with hormones. One person's dealing with the kids. Or there's all sorts of things going on individually and then collectively. And then you've got, like, Oh yeah, there's that sex piece, the intimate part that we're supposed to, like, oh yeah, you know? And then sometimes I feel like, I mean, I guess I can only speak for myself in this, but sometimes you end up like, oh, you do feel bad. Like, oh my gosh, I've been working so much. I probably should go ahead and have sex, even though I'm not feeling like it.
Yeah.
Instead of just opening up the conversation and saying, hey, you know what? I'd rather just cuddle on the couch. That would be great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like one of the, that's like the big thing is there's so many contributing factors. You know, there's so many things going on as far as, like you said, stress and life changes, and then maybe dysfunctional communication after a while, mm-hmm. or emotional disconnection. But sex is the thing where it's like it's the major symptom. You know, it's a thing where couples come in and they're like, you know, we haven't had sex in 6 months or a year, or it's so infrequent. And so it's something that we kind of help them untangle of like understanding, like, this isn't one thing, you know, this is a collection of, you know, they're like when we have a kid, you know, we it's an explosion, and our life, you know, becomes way more complicated and literally 24 hours, and we divide and conquer, you know, like Tara stayed home and she dealt with the twins, and I took on all of her clients, and, you know, and we survived and we got through it. But there was like this misalignment where we were just pulling apart and pulling apart. But luckily, you know, we were creating the center. We had to practice things that slowly brought us back together. But it took a lot of effort. It took a long time.
And it's still intentional, right? We have to have our daily check-ins. We have to talk about all the stuff, especially me going through perimenopause. But I think what like a lot of couples don't realize is that both of them are both feeling like sad and some grief around it. They just, it's not expressed. And so when we get to help couples express what that grief is, like I know for me, I was grieving that I didn't have like sexual energy anymore. I was so sad. But all I knew was like, I didn't know how to talk about it. And so I would just like avoid EJ, and I didn't want date nights because that felt pressure.
I was like the source of the problem, because if I wanted to engage in that way, I was confronting you with your grief, and you were like, stop doing that. Like, stop. I mean, there were times where we had conversations where you were just like, just pretend I'm broken. Pretend like that doesn't work anymore.
My vagina's broken. Okay.
You know, and so, which was hard for me, because I was like, okay, you're broken, like what do I do with that, like, you know?
And
it's interesting that you said that about like that pressure of like, okay, let's go on a date, and it's almost like expected, even if you're like, even back when you're dating, right? And then even when you're married, like, we're gonna go on a date, and then afterwards, you know, like, it's like, oh, but maybe we shouldn't go on a date then, you know?
I mean, the biggest thing EJ and I had to do was recognize the difference between emotional intimacy and physical intimacy. And I want to say this is just with more of like the like male, female, like for whatever reason, right? There's more of that like physical intimacy energy with the male. And for me, like, I just need to feel connected and loved and snuggled. But when we don't talk about it, and EJ doesn't have that like emotional safety to open up to, because he's just feeling rejected and he's feeling unloved and he's feeling invisible and he's feeling not liked. Like, that's so hard for me to like ask and make those requests, because he's like, well, I just feel like I'm not seen at all. So why should I do this for you? And so that was our biggest work, was like EJ softened up, where I felt like his energy, it didn't have that pressure anymore. Because before that, before he was really doing that work for himself, I could feel it. I would be like wearing this cute outfit, and I'm like, oh, he's looking like he wants to undress me. And so I'm just not going to wear cute underwear anymore. Like,
well, and it was interesting, because like, you had all this focus on like the sexual side, and I heard what you said a lot, which was like, I need to feel safe. It needs to be like this emotionally positive environment between us. And then like, I would walk in the door, and like literally just my presence would elicit like resentment and frustration. And I was just like, well, how do I create that environment for you if my mere existence seems to like repulse you, you know?
We've worked through that, thank gosh.
We've worked. I mean, that's the thing with couples that we have to like really get them tuned into, is like, these are not quick solutions, you know? And a lot of it wasn't, a lot of it was tied to dynamics between the two of us, but so much of it was about both of our internal work, you know? It was like for me, it was a lot around you know, around understanding my own defensiveness and my own like ways that I would shut off during conflict. And, you know, and every couple has their sort of like intricate soup of who they are when they come together. And you know, we try to disentangle that and help them gain insight and honestly become empathetic. There were like key moments in our mm-hmm. relationship where I feel like my empathy level, like, grew significantly because we had long conversations. I understood things that were going on for Tara that I didn't understand, you know, prior to that moment.
It's interesting with intimacy how it can feeling one-sided, especially when it's not talked about. You think it's all about, okay, he's not interested in me. He's not attracted to me. There must be something wrong with me, or I'm not, like, it's I, mm-hmm. until you kind of open up those conversations and then you learn like, oh, I didn't know you were actually feeling that way. And yeah. he didn't know I was feeling this way. So it's interesting that, you know, it does seem like in the beginning, I think of any issue, it's always very one-sided and a tendency to probably point the finger, like it's because of him or it's because of her that this situation is like this.
Oh yeah. When we're uncomfortable, we still want to blame other people. It can't be me.
Well, it's so much easier in some ways to like look and say like, well, if you would just be nicer, then I would be able to like back off, you know. It's easier because like she's in front of me. I can see her and I feel like I can, you know, interact with my environment and change it to make myself feel better. And it's much more confusing to look inward and be mm-hmm. like, what's happening for me? You know, what is this? Instead of focusing on ways in which I'm being rejected, I need to look in and be like, why am I so uncomfortable with that? Like, why is that triggering my insecurity? And how can I work through that? So even if she does say, hey, I'm not interested, or hey, this, you just have to write this off for a while, that I can be like, okay, yeah. because that's about you and that's your request. And I love you. And I'm willing to, you know, I'm willing to work through this with you.
Hence the eyebrow plucking. That wasn't our eyebrow plucking. Like, honey, I'm willing to pluck your eyebrows and groom you. Like, that is what I can give to you intimately right now. And he loved it. We were like little monkeys grooming each other. I mean, I was like, here's what I literally can do, because my body literally, Wendy, felt completely numb. And I do want to say something about, you know, I know that, and we've worked with a lot of couples around this, where there's just like, oh, it's been 2 weeks and I know like they're going to be like pressuring me, so I'm just going to like give in and just do that thing. And it actually, like, what we found is it just leads to so much internal resentment to the partner who's just, you know, kind of, what's the word I want to use?
Just like, surrendering.
Surrendering. And then we notice, because we do a lot of somatic work with the couples too, like when we are going through our intimacy series with couples, like their bodies are telling the story of like, I wasn't open to you. I was just doing this as like a chore, a task. And like, so even when they're like starting to touch or whatever, it's like, you know, your nervous system goes into like almost fight or freeze. And so we have to help couples do safety containers with intimacy, like make sure that your little central nervous system is not all jammed up when your partner is touching you and massaging you. Like, so if you guys can just do 5 minutes of touch and making an agreement, there's no sex. Right? We have to do a ton of safety containment in order to build that intimacy back up with a lot of couples where intimacy has been ruptured. But it's also this beautiful process because their whole body now is responding in a different way. You know, it's just that narrative that like sex is a chore. That's not true. That if we don't have sex, our relationship is broken. That's not true. But my goodness, can our brains make those narratives very quickly?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, there's beliefs that you hear from other people, friends, family, social media, and then you start to think, oh my gosh, there's something wrong, or maybe there's not anything wrong. Maybe, I mean, there could be, but it's just getting it out into the open. I want to say you mentioned something earlier about you not feeling like that feminine energy. And at the same time, you were like wanting to feel that feminine energy again and that sexuality. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're like trying to turn it back off. And so you're kind of going back and forth. And I love what you said, that It's like, if you like, okay, maybe you're wanting to kind of get back into your femininity and feel that, put on the cute panties or the cute little outfit or whatever. But with having that, like, okay, I just want to do that and feel that way without, like, let's just make an agreement. We're not having sex though. Like, just to be able to kind of step into your feminine power without that pressure of having sex.
It's awesome.
Or maybe you do.
I mean, I do it all the time now because I'm trying to, especially going through perimenopause and like my progesterone was zero. I was like, what happened to my body? What happened to my brain? I'm doing anything and everything to just feel that, because I'm such a feminine person with that energy. It's like why EJ fell in love with me. Like, I would exude that. And now I'm like, I'm a dry piece of toast that's burnt. So anything that I can do to get that feminine whatever. And I feel so safe with EJ. EJ, thank you.
You're welcome.
Really, because we've gotten through a lot. It's because of that we can do this. And it means the world to me because I don't have to hide it or feel pressure. And it did take a lot of work. And we see with our other couples, there's so much hope. And I feel like couples give up too easily. Because it's that whole, like, the grass is greener or something. And it's like, I'm so thankful that I have this partner who's willing to go through the depths of menopause hell. And whatever it is that I'm trying to learn from it and also accept it. Because I would feel really alone in it if I didn't have you in this way. And I feel like so many people out there are suffering. And they feel alone in it. If they can just help each other, like, hold compassionate space, it's like pretty incredible, because I truly don't know how I would feel without EJ in my corner, because the depression and anxiety, I never even knew. Like, I thought postpartum was bad after twins. Like, the hell? It's like an every 2 hour thing. I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I think partners of the person, you know, the partner that's the more high desire, you know, really has to like take a deep look at what their commitment is. You know, for me, there were like a couple of big like breakthrough moments. Like, it's been years now, but there was just a moment where I was like, I have to accept. We have this whole short module on acceptance versus resignation. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. I think I had been in resignation, that just like, well, you know, whatever. I guess there's nothing I can do. I guess I just. Yeah. You know, I just accept that there's this one aspect of our relationship that just isn't going to happen. Mm. And I moved into acceptance of like, you know, this is where it is right now.
Yeah.
And I know I love her. And if what I have right now is that we lay in bed together and we sleep together and we have really wonderful conversations on Saturday nights out by the pool, I'm okay with that. And you know, and so that was like my first like breakthrough moment, was just like, whatever I have right now is enough. And I'm hopeful and trusting that it's gonna change, but this is enough. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the next level was then it took a lot of pressure off.
Yeah.
Because even now, you know, I mean, I don't even know what, you know, is a healthy frequency, and, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. of like how often you should, but I just don't think about it anymore, you know, or if I do, we talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. we're like, hey, you know, what's going on? And I don't think Tara feels the pressure anymore. But it was like, some of it was definitely, you know, interpersonal, where we had to talk about it and make it normal talking about sex and deal with the disruption that might bring on if it triggered Tara or if it triggered me.
Yeah.
But then a lot of it was just like, I had to like work through the process on my own and figure out my own insecurities and figure out my own ways. Maybe I avoided talking about it because I didn't want to create conflict.
Well, and it just reminds me, because we had so many couples where like, if we don't start having more sex, I'm going to go outside of the relationship. And it's like, to use it as a threat. And I'm like, well, hang on. Like, we can't, like, let's just make an agreement. We can't use that as a threat right now. Let's do this work. But it's like, that's where people go. Like, if you can't meet my needs, I will. I mean, we have so much infidelity at our center and we have so much healing through it. So that's amazing. But it's like, don't go there first. Let's try.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, I think a lot of couples, they make like such strict guidelines, whether, you know, whether it's known or not. I mean, they're just like, oh, okay, if this isn't happening in X amount of time, then boom, like, wait, just relax. Like, you know, it's like anything in life, right? Like,
well, take the pressure off, right? Like that adds like, God, is that going to help?
Yeah. I think the word you said earlier that was key was acceptance. And I think of like acceptance. That was my word last year, acceptance and surrendering, right? Like, I think a lot of times we think waving the white flag is a sign of weakness, but it's actually a sign of strength and just taking a deep breath. Okay. And I find that when we quiet our minds and our hearts and emotions and our physical energies, we actually can hear more, like within ourselves, most importantly, and then within our relationships.
Yeah.
Like the true sticker on your water bottle, let that shit go.
Let that shit go. If you're watching on YouTube, ohm it out. When in doubt, ohm it out.
it's so interesting though. It's paradoxical though, you know, because it's And the line between it being healthy and it being unhealthy are so close because on some level, surrender is good because it's like, okay, I'm just letting go of this. I'm not going to like chew on it constantly in my mind. I'm not going to focus on this constantly. But it's not surrender and like I give up.
You know?
And that's the important differentiation for people is like, because if I give up, then Tara feels like I give up on her. But if I surrender and I say like, you know, I'm letting go of this and I'm focusing on what we do have. And then, but we're going to continue to talk about this.
Right. You know,
we're going to continue to have healthier and healthier conversations because the truth of the matter is in that desire discrepancy, neither person is in an enviable place. But yet, like Tara mentioned before, both people think the other person is in the better position. You know, that Tara's like, well, I wish I had sex drive like you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on some level, I'm like, well, I wish I could just be the one who found a way to gain sex drive back. Like, I'm just sitting here with it, with nothing to do with it, right? You know, and there, and that's where we have to get into, like, empathy of, like, you know, God, like, tell me more. What's it like for you?
And I don't, one concept I would love your listeners to hear, and we had a guest speaker on our podcast, I believe it was Dr. Jessa Zimmerman, called Uncompromised Intimacy. She wrote a book on it. And I remember when I heard that, it blew my mind. I'm like, what is uncompromised intimacy? She's like, it's about, right, EJ used to like not say anything to me, like, God, I think your butt looks so good today, girl. Because he was like, I don't want to, like, she's already stressed out and... So he's compromising his own intimacy, his own, we call him, you know, a frisky scale, because he's caretaking me, right? And then if you start to do that, then you're developing a codependent, unhealthy relationship. You're using your sense of individuation. So we've gotten to a great point, and we help our couples do this. We're like, I want EJ to be like, dang, girl, you are lax. Smoke it. Not that he uses that kind of language, but... And I want to be like, thank you so much. Like, I still want him to want me, even if my frisky scales is zero. I don't want him to, like, caretake me because I love that I know that he's still attracted to me. And couples don't do that. They start to, like, write that eggshell walking. And so when that idea of uncompromised intimacy, this was a few years ago, like, I feel like that's so freedom. You're not losing your autonomy or your own, right? You can still say, hey, I've got to let you know my frisky scale is a 9 and yours is a 0. That's really freaking hard for me. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. Like, and can I help you out with anything there? Thanks for sharing. But that's kind of the conversations we have now. So we don't have, so we can still be ourselves and not create that compromised intimacy, if you will.
I don't know. Can I share something like funny?
Oh, well, I don't know.
This is like a perimenopause thing and like a discrepancy thing. So, you know, the hot flashes, right?
Oh, my God.
So, like, I'll wake up in the morning.
Yeah, they're awful.
Like, And Tara's like naked in bed. I'm like, hey. And then she's like, no, I'm sweating. That's why they're off. I'm
back like, off.
Oh, okay. This is not, okay. All right. We got different, we got different perceptions of this moment. Both of us.
She's like, you can wait 8 minutes and it might be gone. I don't know.
Do not touch me, buddy. Yeah,
don't even get close.
One of the greatest ways I overcame divorce, disease, and depression was by changing my mind, literally. Changing my thoughts changed my life. That's why I created the Freedom Meditations, so you too can change your life. If you're feeling stuck in your thoughts, overwhelmed by life's challenges, unsure of the next chapter, or disconnected from your true self, the Freedom Meditations are for you. These meditations, rooted in my exclusive Freedom Framework, are designed to help you achieve inner peace, empowerment, and clarity. And the best part? Each meditation is only 15 minutes. Just 15 minutes a day to change your life. The Freedom Meditations are available now for an introductory price of just $29. Head to freedommeditations.com to grab your set and start your transformation. So, question for you, in the high desire versus low desire, are the high desire typically the ones that are more physically attractive, like have that more of that physical energy, and the low desire is more on the emotional side of the spectrum?
I think it's just, I don't think there's any like real, you know, breakdown of it because, just because there's so many contributing factors, you know, in stress, you know, like stress is one. We're all susceptible to stress, and stress like diminishes sex drive for many people because your just central nervous system is so taxed. I don't know. Like, what do you think?
Normally, right, high desire partner is one that wants to engage in physical intimacy more often, and the lower desire person just does not have those sexual feelings, those desires like the high desire partner does. And I can relate to that well, because in the beginning of our relationship, I was constantly wanting to, you know, pounce on EJ, and he had been through a wicked divorce, and I think it was just different for him. And so still probably working through his own stuff. And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, like, is he just not into me? Like as the high desire partner, because the physical stuff wasn't there. I mean, my thinking has changed. And now that I'm on the other side, the low desire partner, like, yeah, it's just like my little feelings, like to engage in that physical, like way, the clinging, like the being together with your body. It's just not, I mean, it's happening more organically now, but it's just not there. So I feel like the sexual energy piece to me is like high desire, low desire.
I think there's definitely though a dynamic within heterosexual relationship where men are not as emotionally connected as their wives want them to be, and that is sustainable in the beginning for some reason. Like it's like it's manageable, but over years of the husband not showing up in that way, of not understanding what he's feeling other than like kind of happy, grumpy, annoyed, you know, he's got like three emotions and he doesn't even express those in a clear way, that after a while the wife just feels so disconnected and unheard and doesn't know what the heck is going on for their partner, that then their sexual desire goes away because it's that emotional safety, like, and that phrase is confusing to most men. They're like, When a wife, they start off by saying, I don't feel safe. And then the husband's like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, I barely raised my voice. I've never been physical with you. And then we sort of flesh it out a little bit. And like, what she's talking about is emotional safety, that she understands what's going on with you, that you're emotionally attuned, that you notice her feelings, that you're willing to listen to them without telling her she shouldn't have them. You know, that's a big thing that needs to be rebuilt. Is like, okay, we're emotionally connected. That feels safe. And so now, yeah, I can connect again with you sexually.
Yeah, I would think at the beginning of most relationships, it's kind of like me, man, you, woman, you know, me, yeah. man, you, woman, me, I have the, you know, the masculine energy, you have feminine energy. And it's a great opportunity to be able to like really be very masculine and very feminine. And yeah. then, yeah, like as time goes on, that me, man, you, woman, without any of that like emotional support, can kind of be like the woman's like, I need a little bit more of that emotion in there, you know, like to, yeah.
Yeah.
To, and then to get like, the flame going.
About? Yes.
Well, and that's, yeah. And it's confusing to the man because he's like, well, why weren't we talking about this when we first got together? Why weren't you telling yes. me I was emotionally available?
Because you didn't care. You're just like,
I could give a shit. Yeah. Yeah, we were just having fun. But in some ways, you are more emotionally present at the beginning, even if you don't have that long-term skill, because you're so like enamored by the person that you're like asking them curiosity. About their past and you're learning about their family.
Right.
And yes. then you're like, oh, okay, well, I basically know everything about you, so like... I'm ceasing True. To be curious.
It's like the new car smell goes away and you're just like,
yeah.
Yeah, you become habituated, right?
Yeah. I was just thinking too, it's like high desire versus low desire. There's not a right or a wrong. It's not mm-hmm. like the ultimate goal is to be, you know, high desire, right? And it's bad to be low desire. We toggle, we all do individually and collectively, you toggle between the two.
Absolutely. Mm. And how to be in acceptance of each other and have very intentional conversations when you are whether fluctuating or going through that right, very intense low desire or higher desire.
I'm thinking even like in like episodic things. So we have this thing where I run a boys camp in Maine every summer. I have for the past almost 20 summers. And so we go back there June, July, and August. And that's a time where Tara's stress level goes down significantly.
I mean,
and her sex drive goes up, right? And there have been times where, like, you know, things have been kind of, you know, not happening in Arizona. We get there. And it goes up. And then like a week later, like there's like one time where Tara wants to mess around. And I'm like, oh, I'm like tired. I've been up all day. And she's like, what's going on? I'm like, she's like the low desire partner for like 24 hours. And she's like.
High desire.
Yeah. No, she's the high desire yes. for like 24 hours. And so it's unsettling. I think it's just a natural thing that it's unsettling anytime there's a big discrepancy. Yeah. In that, even if it's just like episodic, it's like, why don't I'm feeling this? Why aren't you feeling this?
Note to self, because this was not a lot of people get to go spend their summers in Maine at a boys camp where your laundry is done for you, where three meals a day are cooked for you, where you're living just a tiny cabin on this beautiful lake and your children are in camp all day and then they're sleeping in their bunks at night. So I literally from right managing a staff of 15 and all the groceries and all the cooking and our four animals, like I go from waking up at 5 a.m. and I don't stop until 9 p.m. to going to Maine and literally my entire body is like, what do I do? And all of a sudden my sex drive is like on. And so I'm like, well, how do I create that when I'm here in Tucson? And I haven't quite figured it out yet.
We're thinking virtual reality.
I was going to say, EJ, that's when you get on a plane. That's why.
But there's something about 3 hours. That balance, not having no responsibility, but there's a balance that I know can be achieved. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do right now. Yoga and meditation and like knowing that like I can only get this much done today. And I feel like that we don't get to have those extreme experiences, right? Like I said, because most people don't get to have that, you know, thankfully, that's why I married you, EJ, because you had a job in Maine and I could go to, just kidding. But recognizing that, like, literally I thought I was broken and then it was like, oh my God, I'm so stressed out and constantly busy and overwhelmed that totally, like, sucks up any energy for intimacy. And so that there's a part of that too, like, because you'll hear couples, they'll go on vacation, like, we had the best time of our lives. Like, we have sex on vacation. We're so intimately, well, guess what? You're on vacation. All your things are taken care of.
Yeah.
So it's really about how to create that healthy balance as much as you can, also when you're in reality. So I don't have to be like 9 months here just constantly stressed in my nervous system. And then three, I mean, I'm grateful for it, but that's what my goal I'm working towards right now. Mm. With the two businesses we own and the four kids and the four animals.
I mean, you know, you can figure that out, right? So easy. You know, I was just thinking, though, like we were talking about acceptance earlier. I'll throw in another A that popped in my mind is awareness. And like you were saying, it's like kind of like trying to tap into yourself and trying to figure out what is it that, what am I feeling and why am I feeling this and how can I turn this on at another time? And it's the awareness of how you feel in yourself mm-hmm. and within that relationship. And I would say most importantly, it's bringing it out in the open, right? I mean, I'm curious, and I'm sure you probably have an answer for this. Why is it such a struggle for couples to have these conversations? It's one of the most important topics, I think, within a relationship, but why aren't they talking about it?
I mean, I'll take the first part. And
okay.
You can take the first part is we're just not taught. I mean, there, you know, most people's programming around sex is it's bad and dangerous. Don't do it. Mm. Until you're married. And then it's a beautiful, wonderful thing that you should do frequently.
Yeah.
You know, and so we just have no context. Nobody teaches us how to talk about it. Nobody teaches us that it's a normal thing to talk about it. Nobody helps you understand that it's not just a physical thing. It's an emotional thing. You know, it's just like we're not acculturated in that way. So that's our foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's any topic that's complex that we're never taught how to speak about it, we're going to struggle once we're supposed to do it.
And I, you know, our entire model that we take our couples through is through an attachment lens theory. Mm-hmm. And it's about, and we learn how to regulate our emotions from our environment, right? Mm-hmm. And if we learn to don't have uncomfortable emotions and like, just, you should be happy for what you have, whatever it is, we learn how to just put up our walls. And so now we get anxious attachment, like, oh my God, like that neediness, like if they leave me, if they don't call me, like something bad's going to happen. And so there's that anxious attachment or the avoidant attachment, like, oh, this emotion is coming at me. I have got to like push that away with a 10-foot pole. Obviously with more trauma backgrounds, there's disorganized attachment. And so we learn emotion regulation or how to not regulate. And then uncomfortable feelings come up as adult in intimate relationships because this relationship is unique unlike any other. Mm. And it's like, what is that feeling? This must be about you. See you later. I mean, we don't learn how to regulate. And so we really do try to, we do a whole going through a genogram and a timeline. Like we take that child from in the womb until the day they met. And we really help understand their regulation system. And then we do a ton of tools in session where people can get in their window of tolerance. Like you don't have to block that out anymore. It is safe to feel angry. Anger is okay. It is safe to feel sadness. Sadness is okay. And once the therapist really creates that safety in the room, then they can go outside and have those awesome conversations and not hide from it or put their survival instincts on. So that's a big part of it, attachment.
Well, and you have, you know, that balance of both individuals that like not only does like Tara have to become okay feeling those things and expressing things, I have to be okay hearing it and validating it and not becoming reactive myself or not taking it personal or trying to solve the problem. You know, that's where it gets complicated is both people moving towards what we want to help couples get to, which is a secure attachment.
Yes.
It's like, I can express my feelings, even if they're complex. You're going to accept them. They're not personal, or even if they are, you can handle it. Yeah. And it creates this like feedback loop of like connection and love and support. And we are becoming our best selves together.
And the relationship isn't in a threatened mode.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I was just trying to think. I was like, you might know this. There's a psychologist that said, it's like basically you learn the most about yourself through a relationship. Like being in a relationship Do you know who that was? Who was that?
I don't know who that is, but we've indirectly quoted them like thousands of times.
I don't know if it's the one with internal family systems or one of the, anyways, but it's so true. Like, I mean, you couldn't just sit in a cave and evolve into, you know what I mean? That would be great. We could just sit there.
Well, it doesn't make sense too, right?
No,
it's like this person who I was the most comfortable with is now the person who makes me feel the most uncomfortable.
Yes.
So then something must be broken. But yet everybody's dealing with it. Like nobody confronts me with my own insecurities and triggers my emotions at such a heightened level as Tara.
You're welcome.
No one. And so I can look at her as a source of a problem, or I can look at her as like, wow, this is an opportunity. Whatever this is I'm feeling, this is worth exploring and talking to her about.
We call each other like our blind spots. And in the lobby, when you walk in, we have this big chalkboard sign that says, our partner is our greatest teacher. Be patient for the lessons.
You just took the words out of my mouth. I was like so proud of myself. I was going to say, oh, it's like your greatest teacher. Yeah, but it's true, right? Like whoever triggers you the most is your greatest teacher. Like those are where the lessons are.
Yes, but staying with that in the society we live in today with all that instant gratification and like, I don't have to deal with this or there's somebody else out there. That's where, you know, our passion right now is to like, obviously like not everybody should be together, but to do the work, to have that compassion for each other's suffering and then make your decision, right? 80% of our couples are like, it's either this or a divorce. I'm like, great. We're going to take you through this process of having more clarity because right now it's like out of fear. So there's this like threat. So why don't you make that decision after understanding all of it? Because now it'll be out of clarity. It's not about staying together, but it's about making a really big choice with all of the knowledge that you can have and understanding and empathy that you can have. And then, right, whether it's for your children or whatever, now you're growing in a way that feels good instead of like, because guess what? It's going to show up in the next relationship if you don't take care of it. And it does, right? First marriages, it's almost 50%. Second is 63%. Third marriages, 70-something percent divorce rate. Why? I could marry someone totally opposite of EJ. And if I don't understand what my stuff is and do that processing, I could marry someone totally different and it's going to show up in a different way. And so that's how I get the couples to be like, hey, it's going to take like 6 months of hell. Like, it's going to be awesome too. But like, don't you want to be able to
what
have
a
this
selling point? You're about to go through hell with us. Buckle out.
No, it's just, it's not linear. It's not like you start couples counseling. It's like, oh, this is awesome. It's like we really untangle things in a really healthy way, but it's not, you know, but I feel like that clarity versus fear, like do you want to make this choice out of feeling super threatened and not wanting to be uncomfortable? Or do you want to be able to get uncomfortable and then be like, oh, okay. Right. And we found like most couples really, I mean, we live like a couple blocks from our office and I will drive by every day and you see couples hugging in the parking lot.
Aww.
And even though our business is so overwhelming and we love it, I'm like, that's why we keep doing this because there's so much healing. And I just feel so proud of like our work that we've done. It started off with that. And all of our therapists are amazing in our center. And we're like the hope holders when people don't have hope. And then going through my, you know, midlife perimenopause, like hopelessness is like a thing. Like there's times where you're just like, is this ever, like, when is this gonna get better? But I also, so I can have that empathy of how people show up in relationship despair. But then, right, we always say this, when you're in a relationship and you feel alone, it's worse than being single. You know, but when you can have this relationship and it feels good, then all the other stressors out there, it's going to be easier to handle. You know, and that's why I'm handling this probably better than I would if I...
Yeah, because we're more connected than we've been, so we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
It's not pulling us apart, if anything.
And you know what, too?
Closer together.
Yeah. And it's like doing the work on any relationship, like worst case scenario, like let's say you decide, okay, this is not, this relationship's not going to work out. We're getting a divorce. Well, I mean, at least you worked on yourself and you dug up some of those things that needed to be dug up and worked on. And then you're a better person. You're better in all your relationships, because that's the thing. It's like, yeah, again, going back to like what you learn in your own, especially in your intimate relationships, it affects everything. It affects fear. It affects the relationship that you have with your children and the relationship that they will have with their, you know, yeah, partners and their children. I mean, it's just like this beautiful ripple effect. So it's like, do the work. Like, do the work.
Sometimes that has to be the starting point for a couple where, yeah, they're like in such despair that we just say like, okay, look, we don't know where this is going to end up. Yeah. And let's accept that. Let's accept that we don't know, mm-hmm, that. But let's say, like, no matter what, you guys could learn a heck of a lot from what's going on between the two, yeah, of you right now.
Yep.
And so you can, you know, you can just bail right now and like throw the baby out with the bathwater, or you can do some work here and see where we, yep, end up, you know.
Yep.
And both, you know, at the end of the day, this is another big thing is like, and if you can both really focus on you.
Yes.
If you can get out of pointing your finger, let's not spend these hours here telling me what's wrong about the other person. Let's, yeah, start every session taking responsibility for what you can take responsibility, mm-hmm, for, and appreciating whatever it was that your partner did that made your life a little bit better this week.
Yes.
And that creates significant shifts if people have the like the willingness and the discipline, mm-hmm, you know, to stick with it.
I would have to say for me, I've been married twice, divorced twice. And after that last divorce, I was like, I'm going to divorce him and marry myself. I am going to work on Wendy. I'm going to take care of Wendy. We're going to dig up all sorts of shit from childhood, 20s, 30s. And it was the greatest gift I gave to myself to spend that time. And it was so awful, but so great at the same time. And I would not be sitting here, you know, yeah, on this podcast if I had not done the work. Because I wouldn't be in a happy, healthy relationship right now if I had not done the work. But I was like, damn it. I was like, I'm going to figure this thing out. And I learned so much about, like, there was like this common thread I figured out, you know, in all my relationships. I was like, that's why I get all pissy about this. And I all the limiting beliefs were just like, boom, boom. I got it. Like, and it's like, yep, ding, 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 ding.
That
and it's
insight such a good is feeling. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I think
suffering shackles us. Suffering takes options away and it keeps us constricted. And you can even see it with you is like, you have like this freedom and the way you express yourself, it's not limited. Right. And you can't do that if you haven't taken on your suffering, you know? Uh-huh. And the thing about it is you understand your suffering, you move through it, you find new systems that you create intentionally. And then all of a sudden, like, you're like, God dang, I can move, you know, I can, or I can just, I have freedom, you know, that's what we want for individuals. Yeah. That's what we want for couples is we want them to feel free to free in their body, free in their minds, free in their hearts. I mean, and then wonderful things happen in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I even think too, I mean, I'm pro therapy, love, love, love. And even when something isn't like really bad or really wrong, I'm still like, still do the work. Like, you're going to find more things about yourself and you're going to evolve into a better woman, a better man, have better relationships. Like, it's always worth it. Always.
Yeah. Where else can you have like an hour a week with someone who has no skin in the game and they just accept you unconditionally, positive regard? It feels so good. It feels so good.
I know.
And the more they know you, the more they're able to provide you insights that you just might not see, you know, or not be able to connect on your own.
Mm.
So, it's a powerful relationship that between a therapist and a client, or a coach and a client.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Tell me more about the program. I know you touched on it a little bit. And that's what's cool, because even if you're not in Arizona, in Tucson, or in mm-hmm. Phoenix, you can still do your program.
Yeah. So it's the method we created. It's a very structured approach, but because every couple is mm-hmm. different, it's kind of, some couples can work through it in 4 or 6 months. Some couples, it's a couple years. It's because if there's infidelity and stuff, that's the in-office therapeutic model. We mm-hmm. created, I believe, once the pandemic hit, and we were like on a year wait list when it was crazy. We were like, we have to do something at home. And so, but we also know, like, for the at-home version, for couples in crisis, it won't work. It could be very destabilizing, mm-hmm. which we're mm-hmm. actually going to start offering coaching sessions this year globally now that we can. So that's awesome. But what we did is we tried to create this, it's like 22 lessons at home based on the model at our Tucson Counseling Center, where it's been very successful. Mm-hmm. And if the couple feels like, wow, we can do this, they explore their attachment history, their relationship timeline. Mm-hmm. There's a communication series, intimacy series, old story, new story, which is my favorite. Like, how were we thinking, feeling, behaving before we started this? You know, mm-hmm. they create their own goals, mid-goal check-in. And then this new story where they're going to continue to cultivate this with their weekly check-ins and stuff. But it is just like a ton of coping skills, interventions, questions to ask each other, moments of being able to build compassion. And so we tried to do what we could at an at-home version with couples not in
crisis. I love it.
And we've had awesome responses globally from it. So it's been really awesome. We feel really proud of that.
You know, I mean, couples don't know. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Oh, no, you go first.
I was just going to say, couples don't know how to talk about these things. And what it does is it's a week by week. Here's a structured way. Here's mm-hmm. 8 questions. Here's an exercise. Here's yeah. a fun thing to do, you know, because you and your partner are the sort of clay, and you need some help in sort of shaping it and putting mm-hmm. it together and taking those rough edges off. And so the program just gives the model, sorry, Tara, she likes model better than program. Model just gives a structure for a couple to have really positive experiences and learn more about each other.
Yeah, we try to put in fun things like 6 words. If you finish your at home, what would it feel like and look like? And put it up in the kitchen where every day you're looking at, like, more playful, more flirty, whatever those 6 mm. words are. So combination of like some difficult conversations, because that has to happen.
Yeah.
But also some really fun things too. So yeah.
I want to do it. I'm like, I want to do it. You know, I was just thinking, it's like, for some people that aren't as gung-ho about going to therapy as I am, it's a great way to be able to do the work without, like, oh, we got to go talk to a therapist. Like, and you're doing it at home. It's comfortable and you're with each other and you can pause the video and discuss or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I love that. And the reason why, because we're hearing really great feedback, but also there are some couples that, like, gosh, this would be so great if, like, Tara and EJ offered some, like, coaching through it, because they'll get stuck in a couple of them. And that's where we were like, absolutely, we can do. I mean, it hasn't been developed yet, but it's starting in the next few months. And so we hear back from the community and, like, we can make that happen. Right. Yeah. So it's in the work. So there will be, again, but if, I mean, like, you, I'm a fan of therapy. I'm a fan of a great couples counselor. Like, have that person that is creating that safety for you, then you get to have those skills and bring them outside of the therapy session. That's okay too. There is nothing wrong with you if you have to go to couples therapy. Nothing at all.
Nothing wrong. You know what, too? I saw the price on your website, and I literally, in my mind, I was like, that is insanely affordable. And on your bullet point, it literally says insanely affordable.
Subliminal messaging is working.
Wait, does it really?
Yeah.
It does. It's something like that. I was like, it's true. Something like this. Some phrase like that.
My whole thing is, like, so many couples don't have the luxury of affording couples therapy. And I wanted to make it, trust me, we've had people like, you guys need to, and I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I want people to be able to have access to this. Yes. And that is important to me, because I know there's other therapists in the community, not the community, but globally, that have programs, and they're like $1,300, $1,600. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I just, we offered it free over COVID. People were like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just, this is what I want to do. I want to give back. Like,
I love it. And I did happen to notice on EJ's bio on the website, it said something about, I think it's the very last line. It said something about making the world a better place. Like, that's your main purpose. And absolutely, by doing that, right? Like, by creating better relationships, you are making the world a better place. It's
like the first building block of our community, you know? Yep. There's couples, there's families, there's businesses, there's communities. It's a great intervention point of creating connection that then is going to reverberate out.
Mm. Thank you so much. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. So are you.
You're really fun.
Thank you. I'm back in Arizona in Felicia, in the RV, I'll have to cruise down and see you guys. It's so pretty down there. I never make it down to Tucson, though. I always end up like, what is it, Casa Grande? I usually go down that way.
But 45 more minutes, Casa Grande. Yeah. You got this. We could do an in-person interview.
We're like a UNESCO, culinary city of significance now.
Yes.
Great food here.
Arizona's amazing. At least I'll be there, I'll be there in March and April before the summer hits.
Good idea. Perfect. Good idea. Yeah. We'll take you out.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to come see you guys.
For some barilla. We're
You didn't roll your R's.
Barilla.
Well,
barilla. The barilla. Yeah. And I'm still learning Portuguese over here. Oh my God. So tell us where we can find you.
I mean, the easiest thing to do is relationshiprenovation.com. Everything's there. If you're local, our service is there. You can get to our online program through that website. The other thing is that, you know, our podcast and YouTube channel, and again, same thing, Relationship Renovation, check it out. We're putting out really wonderful, like you, interviewing amazing people, talking about just how to cultivate a really loving, caring relationship with your partner.
Thank you. I'm glad you guys were the guinea pigs for all of this. And you were the guinea pigs to make it. Yes. Good little guinea pigs. Thank you
blessing
so much,
guys.
Everyone have a great day.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.